live from Liverpool, we need to talk about ghosts with Kevin Eustace.
Yes, that's right. Well done, intro. It is indeed time for Talk About Ghosts with me, Kevin Eustace. It's time for the Sunday sermon. Just quick little side note here. You know the way, have you seen some ghost videos where, like, a balloon, a helium balloon will walk around of its own accord? I've always looked at them and thought, you know what that is? Some of the gas has just gone out of them. They've reached, like, a sort of plateau level, and then any sort of breeze around the building is making them go along at a perfectly consistent height. And I've just got proof of that because I bought Becca a rainbow balloon for Valentine's Day with two smiley faces attached to it. This is it. And the reason you can hear that is because it's followed me around this living room all morning. And when I made a coffee, it was like, I'm going to come to the kitchen with you. It's like, thank you, balloon. And then I come and set this up, and it's like, I'm going to sit next to you when you do the... Get away. I'm going to sit next to you when you do the recording. Honest to God. And obviously, I'm not the sort to take a pair of scissors to a Valentine's gift. No, no, no. But as it's got two smiley faces on them, I'm just going to address them very quickly on the show. Will you kindly do one whilst I do this recording? People expect to be scared, and you're not scary. You're a smiley cloud face attached to a rainbow. So can the Perriers just fuck off for a minute, please? Pardon my French. I'm going to push you away. There you go. It'll be back. It'll be back. Getting haunted by a bastard balloon. Anyway, how are you all? I hope that you're all fantastically well. We don't mention the C word in this town. No, we don't. But it's had an effect on us this week. Not in a great way either. I've sadly found out that a relative of mine, a very, very close relative, has been given days to live, which is awfully sad. And complete surprise, just went in for a checkup, and they were like, oh, guess what? Which is horrible. And it is horrible, but we're not the only ones going through anything like this. It's just awful because you can't go around and stuff like that. But anyway, that's been our week. So yeah, it's been a bit up and down, really. Like this balloon, I say. Anyway, enough about deaths and balloons. Oh, my God, they're not even dead yet. Fucking hell, Kevin. Have a word with yourself. But you know what I mean. Enough about those sorts of things. I hope that you're all fantastically well and that you're ready for a good spook because my lord, my lordy, 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 do we have a plethora, yes, my favourite word, a plethora, capital P, B, 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 for you. Yes, we do, of great, amazing and terrifying ghost stories. It's been a lovely little interesting time. There's loads of little weird stories coming out in different sorts of media. So there's a programme on Netflix. I think it's a programme, might be a film. I think it's called Behind Her Eyes or In Her Eyes. And it's all about astral projection. Yes, it is. So I've put that on the watch list because, as you know, I claim to have astral projected when I was 16 years of age. So I need to watch that. There was an article somebody put up saying, this isn't even what astral projection's like. And I was like, oh, shut up. I'll just watch the film. So I'm excited to watch that. What else did I watch? Oh, yeah, just to let you know, because this isn't a new feature of Kev's recommendations of things to watch. I'm just saying. There was also on Amazon Prime, I paid the pricely sum, the princely sum even, of £4 to watch a film called The Taking of Deborah Logan. Now, I came up on a list of like the 20 scariest films of the last few years, and it was on it. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to watch it one of the afternoons through the week. So I did, and the first 80% of it, terrifying, like really well done. The premise is this girl's doing a documentary or like a PhD or something on Alzheimer's research, and then the Alzheimer's woman slowly starts to become possessed by the devil. Yes, and it's very good. But tell you what, the last 20 minutes, I had to stop. I didn't even finish the film because the last 20 minutes, talk about jumping the shark. It doesn't just jump the shark. It catapults the shark, grabs the shark, takes it to Disneyland, gets its photo took with Mickey Mouse, and you're meant to believe all this is real. And it's just, oh, it's awful. You know, considering the first 80% is fantastic, the last 20% is goddamn awful. Anyway, we don't come here for Kev's film reviews, but if he was going to buy that for £4, don't. Unless that's your bag, in which case, do. So, we come here for strange news, we come here for amazing news, we come here for stories of the supernatural and paranormal. Yes, we do. And we haven't had it for a few weeks, but I thought now would be a good time to reintroduce Week in Weird.
Week in Weird.
Yes, it's time once more to see what weird and wonderful things have taken place in the world in the last 7 days. Well, the reason why we brought back this segment is because something very terrifying has happened in my hometown. Yes, in Aintree, which is a suburb of Liverpool where they host the Grand National. Yes, the horse race. Anyway, I'm taking this from the Daily Mail online, which, yeah, you know, but it is a very good story and a very, very good piece of documented evidence too. So, Darren Pallister and his fiancée, Jessica Mason, 27, in Aintree, in their home in Aintree, had set up some night vision cameras to try and catch their dog running amok around their house. However, and I quote, "A couple was stunned after catching a blonde ghost bride on their CCTV cameras. Darren Pallister, 27, nearly fell out of bed when he checked his motion-activated cameras around 3 a.m. one day and found the footage of a spooky silhouette moving around just after midnight. He and his fiancée, Jessica, said they felt there was something there in their home in Aintree, Merseyside. Miss Mason was asleep when the cameras, set to view their French bulldogs, captured the ghoulish figure at 12:34 a.m. on January the 2nd. The couple said they felt a calming presence of another person in their pre-war semi-detached property recently, claiming it's even accompanied by the sweet smell of perfume." Yes. Mr. Pallister, a carpet and upholstery cleaner, shared images of the CCTV footage to Facebook, prompting spooked friends to order him to burn the house down. Wow, that's what you call friends, just burn down your house where you live, yeah? He's since been contacted by a paranormal investigator, it was not I, who was fascinated by the image and hailed it as the best of its kind he's ever seen. He said, "I was scrolling down through the motion notifications and I nearly fell out of the bed when I saw it. I thought, that's mad. And I woke Jessica up and showed it to her. She couldn't explain it either. It couldn't have been Jessica because she was asleep and it looks like she's got a bit of a fringe and Jess doesn't. Some mates were messing around and saying it's Jess, but I tell you it's not. The clothing looks off the shoulder and she hasn't even got any pyjamas like that. The next day, I started messing around with the contrast and sharpness on my iPhone, and when I did, you could really see the face coming through, and that's when I knew it was a person. Ever since we moved into the house, we've said you can feel like there's something there. I find it hard because I've never believed anything like that. Jess will go to bed and I'll be there playing the PlayStation and I'll feel like someone's sitting in the living room with me. You get a dead sweet smell as well. No sooner you breathe in and out and it's gone. It's like a perfume. Sometimes I've thought it's wax melt, but none of them are turned on. People say we..." Sorry, it's hard to do a Scouse accent when you're a Scouser. This is a very generic Scouse accent. I'll carry on. "People were saying they'd be moving out if this happened to them, but it doesn't give us a spooky feeling. It doesn't feel negative. It's just bizarre." Mr. Pallister claims to have captured white orbs on the motion detector's camera and says the spooky goings-on only happen in that one room. He's going to get in touch with a local historian to shed some light on the situation because he says his landlord isn't aware of any deaths at the property and is as baffled as he is. He also goes on to complete the story to say, "I've never been a believer in ghosts, but me and Jess have said that we sometimes feel like someone's around. Every now and again you just get a feeling that someone's looking over your shoulder. I've looked back through our camera and it's the dining room where the motion sensor's picked up on." Now, in my humble opinion, if this is genuinely a genuine picture, if it's not a picture of his wife and he's been truthful when he says she was in bed, it is one of the most genuine things I've ever seen. And I will put a link to this article in the show notes too, so you can see the picture for yourself. It's a full-bodied apparition, so I don't know. If it's not his wife, and it does have a fringe, he's quite right. It doesn't look like her, but you never know, do you? Anyway, that'll be in the show notes to look at, and that completes this week's Week in Weird.
Week in Weird.
Now, it goes without saying, we would not even be running at the moment if not for our wonderful, beautiful, dare I say, sexy Patreons. Yes, indeed. Now, we've had some wonderful Patreons sign up this week, and I'm going to say thank you via the medium of song, as I always do. Big shout out to all of those people and all of our Patreons. Thank you very much. If you'd like to become a Patreon, where, of course, you get your name sung out, but you also get two extra shows just for Patreons each and every week. I'm going to record this week's Paranormal Patreon episode just after this episode. episode. So it'll be up there today. And of course, you can get entered into prize draws. We're about to announce another competition over there. All you need to do is go over to patreon.com/we need to talk about ghosts. And yeah, go sign up and support the show if that's what you like. Yes. In the meantime, let's say thank you. And we have three wonderful new Patreons to say thank you to this week with this guitar. And their names are Wayfarer, Heather Catanzaro, and Melissa Williams. And this song is for you, three wonderful people. Wayfarer has signed up to the Patreon, and guess who has too? Melissa Williams has signed up as well. Heather Catanzaro, join them as well. And patrons, they'll be keeping the lights on this week. Patronage. Hooray! Ended it on a seventh. Tried to do a bit of a McCartney number there. I'm going to try and put the guitar down now, see if I can succeed. Yes, it's very precarious. It may fall off mid-recording. But thank you to you three wonderful people. Don't forget, patreon.com/we need to talk about ghosts. It's where all the cool kids are. Be a cool kid. And go sign up. Okay, let's crack on with your... And our first story today comes in anonymously. Yes, it does. And it begins, hello, Kevin. Hello. / Becca.
Hello.
/ Admin Lovely, which must be Matt Toppin from Full Movie Podcast. I'll try and do Matt. What? He's a Cockney geezer, is he? Anyway, my wife and I love the show. It's very funny, human, provocative, and most importantly, very, very, very well read. I think you need to listen to more podcasts. You may well change your tune. I need to leave a review saying as much, and I will. Oh, thank you very much. I grew up in a haunted house. Below is my attempt to put it into a linear framework. Sorry if it's shit, too long or overwritten. I'm sure it'll be none of those things. Please don't use my name, as I don't want to upset any of the people in the story. And then he says the T word, though they may be. And if you're wondering what T word, tomorrow wear a tie. That T word. Just take the initials. You know what I mean. And anyway, this is their story. Our house was a newborn, a freshly built bungalow in a hushed, field-devouring suburb. There were five of us. Me, my sister, my father, my mother, and whoever it was that would lean over me at night whilst I pretended to sleep, their breath settling like a fine, cold mist across my face. I would tell myself it was just a draft. This helped prevent the rising panic from spilling over. This is an amusingly common response to terrifying phenomena, and why almost all ghost stories end with the colossal anticlimax of, and then I went back to sleep. We didn't always have this house guest, although I was always scared and nervous. Our house was a dark environment. A contributing factor was our mother's mental illness. Our father was a mechanic in the East End of Glasgow, and instead of fighting for his wife or even his children, he chose instead to be absent, leaving the house before 6 a.m. and returning at around 8 or 9 p.m. when he knew his wife would definitely be in her separate bed, emanating hate. As a consequence, my sister and I absorbed the brunt of her freewheeling cruelty, although my sister got the worst of it, I think. My mother rarely seemed to hate us. She hated hearing us speak. She hated hearing us laugh. She hated us for getting hurt or getting sick. Her stock response to a crying or vomiting kid was to shriek, "You stupid, stupid child." You know what? I don't interrupt stories anymore. I'm doing it on this one because God bless you. Fucking hell, that's horrific. And I know you've already said that she had mental illness. So, you know, I'm not going to be too harsh on your mother, but I do want to say, well done you for getting through that, because there's nothing worse than that sort of mental child abuse. It's horrible. So I did want to jump in here and just say, well effing done you for coming through it the other side, because that's horrific. That really is. And well done. Anyway, let's get back to hopefully paranormal stuff. Here we go. An early memory is of my mother deliberately feeding us food she knew we found disgusting. Fish in Ruskeline in particular. For those unfamiliar with the fuck-awful 80s house-fro combo, it's like thousands and thousands of tiny orange spider eggs which are then fried into an acrid shell around needle-filled meat, the flavour of a leper's band-aid. My sister once vomited uncontrollably whilst attempting to choke this garbage down. My mother made her sit there sobbing, mouthful of cold puke, forcing her to finish the meal. In brackets, my sister's counsellor once asked her to give a name to the negative thoughts in her head, and she of course replied, "Mum," without even thinking. Anyway, I assumed every family was like this, living in confused despair and only pretending to be kind to outside observers. This setup never changed. The only thing that did was the darkness, which slowly deepened and took on a strange, squirming, grainy quality. It was a dingy house with few lights allowed on. The quality of dark in that house remains totally unique to me. I have encountered nothing like it since leaving. It was like being submerged in black static. It seemed to have currents and eddies. Worse, it seemed as if there was someone living in it. We never felt alone. We always felt watched. And the air always felt charged with dread and foreboding. We lived in a suspense, always ready for our mother to morph into a wet-eyed banshee over nothing. Things began to escalate when I was a teenager. One night, I had to go to the back garden to urinate, as the sound of a flushing toilet would prompt our mother to burst from her room to angrily interrogate the pisser about their necessity of their necessities. Just a great, great lady. As I pissed, I looked into the moonlit field, and then involuntarily stopped midstream. Perfectly framed between two large bushes that crested a hill was an absolutely enormous silhouette of a man. This was not a crop field. There were no scarecrows. The bushes themselves were about 5 feet tall. The figure stood about 4 feet higher than that. And it was looking at me. I could feel it. I finished the rest of the piss in my pants and pretended I hadn't seen what I'd definitely seen. I thought about this a lot over the years and I have no idea what it was. I don't know if it was tied to the field itself, which was often home to strange lights, or if it was something to do with the darkness in my house. I do know that it wanted me to see it. When I glanced back at it before entering both the house and denial, it raised its arms and stood, cruciform. What a dick. I began to have nightmares constantly. They were always the same. I would be upstairs standing in front of the attic door, rooted to the spot, certain that something terribly angry stood behind it. I would wake up just as the door swung open. Classic Jungian fuckery. Despite this, and despite everything, I was desperate to move out of my tiny bedroom next to the toilet downstairs and up into the spare room that had been partitioned off from the attic. It was further away from everyone else, quieter, less accessible to furious women, and a massive mistake. That's when I began to feel the breath on my face every night. Cold, regular, rhythmic breath. A friend stayed over once. He woke me up to ask if I could hear someone else in the room, breathing. I said yes. Yes, I could. He chose not to set foot in the house again after that. Things got darker. My bed would shake. The crawl space door that led into the eaves would open by itself, and I would wake up staring into this small, vibrant abyss of blackness, too scared to get up and push the bolt lock back in place. I kept it all to myself. There was nobody to talk to about it. My sister had become something of a quisling, trying to gain our mother's approval by imitating her noisome content. We're close now, and I know she was just trying to survive, but it made the atmosphere even thicker. The nadir came when I was in the midst of a deep depression that had been settling into me since I was 12. I'd fallen asleep listening to my CD player. I woke up when something grabbed my wrist, pulled my arm up into the air and then down to the floor to deposit the CD player. It then slowly pulled my arm back up and laid it across my chest, like it was doing me a favour. I told myself I'd been sleeping on my arm and it was numb, but it wasn't. Something had touched me. Something had gripped and moved my limbs. Something had arranged me in my bed. Something unseen. Something that leaned over me at night, venting frigid air from its dead lungs. It's a curious thing to live with an invisible entity. It's both terrifying and mundane. You just have to live with it if you have no other recourse. Plus, it was 1995, and The Exorcist was still banned by the Bellends at the BBFC, so I wouldn't have known to order two disposable priests, one young and one old. It was shortly thereafter that my father told me someone had died in our back garden when I was 4 years old. A distant cousin on my mother's side had been checking in on our house whilst we were away on one of our miserable attempts at a family holiday. And instead of watering the plants, he'd just dropped dead of a massive heart attack. I asked my mother about this during one of her infrequent placid phases, in brackets, she'd finally been medicated, although this was not to last. She confirmed that he had indeed died, but not in the garden. It had been upstairs, in the attic. And then she said this: "I thought I saw him afterwards, standing in the corner of my bedroom." When she saw my expression, she dismissed it and said, "It was just a dream. I don't believe in ghosts." This, despite the recency of her wristwatch stopping at 4:36, the exact time of her mother's death. My mother's normal phase quickly came to an end with her prescription, and she soon slipped back into her old screaming habits. After a particularly horrible encounter with her, I'd rushed upstairs and written the following in my maths jotter: "She is 18/10 of the way past irredeemably pathetic." I had to get something down, and that was the best my 16-year-old self could do. When I got up the next morning, resolved to rip the page out and destroy it in case she saw it, my blood froze. Written in wildly shaky pencil, right next to my statement, were the words, "She is a fool." I stood there, poleaxed, running through the possibilities. I know it wasn't my sister, and it certainly wasn't my father. Nor could it have been my mother, for if she'd seen it, she would have atomized me on sight. Shocked, I decided to settle on one vaguely calming detail. The thing in the house agreed with me. It was on my side. This genuinely helped me to cope with the phenomena, the constant anger and misery. And whilst nothing ever improved in that house, and the dark was still darker than it should be, I grew more confident in myself, in the rightness of my perceptions, and resolved to get the fuck out of that bog-standard suburban shitbox as soon as I had the means. Which I did, moving into an absolutely disgusting flat upon graduating university, where the only disturbing activity was a flatmate who refused to wash his hands after taking a toilet, and who ate hot dogs crumbled onto microwave fish pie. I don't go back to the house a lot. I keep my distance from its inhabitants. It's still too dark in that place. Everyone still seems sad and stifled. Sometimes I'm tempted to leave open-ended questioning notes in the attic. I still might. I'm not sure if I'm ready for the answers or to know who or what is really up there. Thank you once again. And if I ever find employment, once the air is breathable, I'll sign up for your Patreon. Oh, God bless. All the best. And then he uses his name, but I'm not going to use his name. Oh, my God. That is horrific. Well, I will reiterate, well done you for getting through that, because that sounds like one hell of an upbringing that I wouldn't wish on anyone. But that, all of that horribleness aside, what the devil's this cruciform man? What a great word, by the way, cruciform. What is this cruciform man doing in the middle of a field? That has put, I can picture that perfectly well, as I'm sure everyone can, and it's terrifying. Yes, it is. And yes, you did need two priests. You needed about 9 priests in total, I think, because that is terrifying. It's like something out of a severe horror film, that, isn't it? the vision of just a 9-foot, there we go, we spoke about this in the past, evil entities are massive. They're just huge. They're just big, lanky beasts. Like, so that was 5 foot for the hedge and 4 foot on top of that. So that's 9 foot. Another 9-foot demon there just preying on you as you sleep. That is truly a terrific, well-written story. So thank you, Anonymous. You know who you are. That's put the fear of God into me. And again, I will reiterate, well done for getting through that childhood. That's horrific, and no one should be put through that. So well done, you. Our next story comes in from Lisa C, and it's called An Almost Encounter. She writes, "Hi.
Hi.
I'm Lisa, and this is an almost encounter that still made me super nervous. I'm sending this to multiple shows. I hope that's okay." No, it's not. I'm joking, of course. Of course it is. Just out of it. I'm a nosy bugger. Who else he sent it to? Oh, Emma and Dan. Lovely people. So let's carry on. And this is your story. It was about 5:45 p.m. in early December, so it pretty much full dark. I went for a run, mostly on the street where there's light, but I finished near the start of my favourite trail, in brackets, that I usually only go to during the daytime. I start to go in, trusting to my flashlight and the fact that the trail is a shortcut home. And then I pause, because several dozen metres into the trail is this weird floating light. It's kind of warm-looking light, and vaguely rectangular, and too far from the street to be a street lamp. So, here I am, thinking there is no way this shortcut is worth getting lured into the creek by a will-o'-the-wisp, and decide to turn around. As I'm about to turn, a car passes on the street. Now, this thing is close enough to the road that this car's overbright LEDs can illuminate it. It's one of those pick up after your dog signs, but the shiny back was facing the road, and I'd just passed its counterpart on the way in. Anyway, I wrote this up initially as I walked home the long way round, where there was light, no creaks or will-o'-the-wisps. Love the show. She means shows, because she sent it to more than one. I joke, of course, but terrifying that. I wonder what that was. Yes, vaguely rectangular. Could it be the ghost of a box? A box ghost? No, I'm being facetious there. That is terrifying, and I don't think there's anything scarier than walking home at night and thinking to yourself, should I just risk that shortcut? Where we live here, you can go out onto the main road, and which is called Duke Street, and you can walk up to where all the chippies and takeaways are. That's one way of doing it. Or you can do a right through a little square, which then takes you between two buildings, which are from like the 18th century, and go down this little spinny path, which takes you out to a similar place, but in half the time. How many times when it's dark has Kev gone down that spinny path? A big fat zero. Yes, even when I go down it in the middle of the day, I'm a bit like, I need a proton pack, 92 priests, and some holy water, pretty please. No, in all seriousness, thank you, Lisa, for sending that story in. That is terrifying. And it's kind of a jute, isn't it? It's just one of those things. So well done for noting it, because we normally don't make notes of our jutes. But fantastic. Brilliant. If you've got a story just like Lisa's, it doesn't have to be just like Lisa's, you know. It can be anything paranormal. Then don't forget where you can send it in. You can send it in to contact@talkaboutghosts.com and I will read it out. Also, if you want to come on the show, we'll have a little bit of a Zoom session and I'll interview you about your paranormal personal experience. PPE in the workplace, people. Yes, do that. Same email address, contact@talkaboutghosts.com. Our final story today, I mentioned last week. Remember I said that we have a Ouija board story that features some audio? Well, it does. And this is the reason why it's been saved to last. Because what I've done is I've edited, it's a long piece of audio that the person who sent the story in has sent over. It's like 9 minutes long. And I've edited that down a bit and added a little bit of my own commentary on it after this story. So you'll see what I mean anyway. But I'll just crack right in. It's excellent. Get on to this. So this comes in from Katie. She says, "Hi, Kevin Becker. Hi.
Hi.
This is just one of a few stories I've got to share. When work is less chaotic and I have more time, in brackets, hooray for working in ICU during a global pandemic. Well, yes, hooray. Well done you, Katie, you bloody hero. And I sincerely mean that. I'll send some more in. Sorry for the length. I was going to be very rude there. I've attached some audio from part of the session. Feel free to use it / clip it down, which I have. Okay. And this is the bulk of the story. I'm a practicing witch and have utilized a spirit board for many, many years, in brackets, mostly without sinister effects. Recently, before COVID, myself, my partner, and three friends were doing a spirit board session. My partner doesn't particularly believe in it, but went along with it out of curiosity, not thinking anything would come through or happen. I cast a circle and protection on all of us and opened the session. We encountered three spirits that night. The first lived locally and died from smog. We live in a city heavily associated with the British Industrial Revolution. Our house was built by a prominent mill owner in Leeds. The second was a female who told one of my friends, we'll call R, that she was going to have a downfall and she needed to be careful. The third is where things got weird. My partner had come away from the board and was sat down on the couch. The board kept spelling his name. I asked if there was a message for him, as it seemed it wanted to speak to him. My partner spaced out, / went really vacant for a few seconds. He then spoke a single word. Advarsel, in brackets, Norwegian for warning, but nobody present spoke Norwegian at all. He came back to himself and had no idea why we were staring at him. After a while, whenever I asked the board anything, it would just spell out witch, evil, hell. So my friend R started to ask the questions. My partner kept uttering words, which we Google translated and found out that they spelt in Norwegian pieces, bodies, heart, door. A while after he said door, three out of five of us all swore we saw someone stood in the doorway. The thing is, there is no way for anyone to be stood at the doorway, as there is a locked 6-foot metal gate to get into the garden. We checked the garden. The board kept calling me a witch and saying I was evil and should be good. At this point, my partner spaced out again. He stared right in my face, uttered something we couldn't hear properly, but carried on staring at me. His face didn't look like his usual face. There was something menacing there. The board kept spelling R-U-N over and over again. I said I wouldn't run. At this point, my partner stood up and lunged at me as if he was going to attack me, but stopped at the three white candles on the table, laughed a low menacing laugh, and died them out one by one with his hand. My friend R tried to get out of his way, and he grabbed her by her hand and called her by her middle name, in brackets, the only person who knew that was her boyfriend N, who was sat watching the session and not participating at all. At this stage, the energy felt different and a lot more threatening. I forcefully closed the session, cleansed the area, board, and the house. We decided to record the audio for this session shortly after my partner started speaking in another language. Listening back to the audio is chilling. If there wasn't so many of us with the exact same recollection of events, audio recordings and someone observing the session, even I would call BS. That night, when we went to bed, I had the overwhelming feeling that if I rolled over, I would see someone standing over me. There was a strange noise at the side of the bed, but I could not bring myself to look up. The next morning, my partner had zero recollection that we'd even done a spirit board. No memory at all. When I shown him the audio, he got a severe headache and had to sit back down. I did a ritual cleanse on him, and nothing else seemed to happen. I've since done another session, and nothing like that happened again. I connected with my great-grandmother, who died before I was born. Incidentally, I'm named after her and was born on her birthday. That's from Katie. Thank you very much, Katie. Now, people of the world, people of the listening variety of the show, there's a listeners, that's a better word, listeners, I am about to divulge to you the recording of that Ouija board session. As I say, I've cut it down to pull out what I think are the terrifying parts, but we're all going to listen to that together right now.
Right, we're recording.
J-E-D-R-O. And then sale. That's what I thought. That's what it says online anyway.
It says Yeoman, doesn't it?
Yeah. Nordic name.
Is Yeoman an ancestor?
Did you hear it? Did you hear that little almost EVP when they asked the question going, no? But interestingly, it says yes on the board when they carry on, so you never know. The next thing that we're going to hear now is apparently the guy being possessed sounds like he's saying, give in. Listen to this.
Give in.
Sorry.
How scary is that? Give in. Good. Now we move it a bit forward now, and it gets to a point where he kind of snaps out of it and he doesn't believe what's gone on, which is quite convincing, really. So this is that bit.
So I won't just look at
you. Why are you here?
You told me to come here.
You were there.
I was.
Say that again.
I did.
You did another weird word.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
You did.
I'm recording.
No.
Glaven.
Okay, so they found out that, or they have a little Google in Glaven. The nearest they get to it, it means woman. Okay, they do a little bit more on the Ouija board. It spells out Eve, which is one of the participants' middle names, strangely enough, which nobody knew. And now the guy gets seemingly possessed again, which is just bloody terrifying.
I grant you permission to use my power to communicate with me. What do you want? What do you want? Keeps going to me.
Let it.
Over, and you can hear the nervous laughter there, which you would be nervous and giggling out of pure nerves. And they go on to ask, you know, can you repeat what you've just said, please? And is it for Eve? And lo and behold, it does repeat it like this.
Is that a message for Eve?
Is that a message for Eve? Yes. What does that mean? What did he even say? Goodbye. Are you gone?
Okay, and that's the end of the salient parts of that seance / Ouija board spirit session. How amazing is that? The most telling part in terms of authenticity for me is when the guy, you hear him say, why are you there? Like somebody's moved from the position they were in prior to his trance, in inverted speech marks, over to somewhere else, and he's just realised that they've moved. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. So thanks very much, Katie. That's I've never received audio of a genuine spirit session, and we've had some weird stuff sent into this show. So that, all in, is just a fantastic story with some evidence attached, which you can't really beat, can you? Can you? I say not. Wow. Well, that wraps up another show. So, guys, if you have stories that you want to send in for me to read out or play like we've just done with Katie's one, send in to contact@talkaboutghosts.com and we'll get them on the show. If you want to come on the show and discuss in person your personal paranormal experience, then same address, contact@talkaboutghosts.com. And if you want more of the shows, then don't forget you can get 2 extra shows per week for Patreons only. That's patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosts. In the meantime and in between time, you wonderful, wonderful, dare I say, beautiful people, as Jeremy Springer would say back in the 90s, take care of yourselves and each other. Daddy bye.